Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Here we are. You know, the Hopi elders have told us for decades that the earth is crying. They've told us that in these moments, while one world age dissolves and another opens, the possibilities of a planetary shutdown, a cessation of life as we understand it, are too high. And the challenges of listening to the cries of our Earth Mother grow in each instant of existence against that ever-grinding wheel of profit, ego, and green murder. You can pray towards heaven, but you know, you got to row towards shore. On tonight's show, we're going to discuss the shift in consciousness towards awakening our vision by listening to ancestor spirits and guides who are with us through these amazing moments. This is The Consciousness Shift with Nicole Tomasini in New York, and I'm Gwendolyn H. Berry. On this land, the Americas, 7 out of 10 spirit guides that come to us initially and ally us from several dimensions are red and brown brothers and sisters. And Grandmother Drum, she talks about the ongoing, I'm looking for it, here it is, Grandmother Drum tells us about it, here you go.
Flying board walk, he's old and
That was awesome. Are you still there?
Okay. Well, I put mute on because I was using my e-cigarette and didn't want to do no blowing of the pipe and on Buffy Savory grandmother drum. You know? It's called No No Kekekeja, and it's actually it translates into No More Greedy Guts.
No more greedy.
No more greedy guts. I'm using
guts.
my iPhone tonight instead of my speakerphone because we had helicopters all over the place, and it was like, boom, boom, boom. I thought I was in Vietnam, you know?
Like, wow. Boom, what are the helicopters
boom,
about?
Well, the helicopters are going over the territory here because apparently someone's committed a crime and run away, so they got the lights on and they're looking in the alleys and... You know, man.
Yes.
The people are talking.
Yeah, man. Po-po. Po-po.
So, how are you? How was your week, Nicole?
Well, I liken it to, I was thinking of how I would describe to you my week, and
mm-hmm.
I liken it to a rigorous training program where... Every day you gotta learn something else or use the same muscle group that you've been using for 2-3 days and is exhausted, right? And you just gotta find another way for it to do its thing. And then, but it is rewarding. I seem to be making some good shifts here, and the world around, my world around me is shifting. So that's good.
Well, that is, yeah. Now, I didn't get the kind of calls that I would really like to get this week. There's mm-hmm. some kind of, you know, transmission problem between the universe and my phone, but I'm sure it'll work itself out.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do, though, is I got a real scary letter from the IRS that I had to deal with right away. And so... That
wow.
was frightening. I'm sort of convinced that, yeah, it was like, and I did the right thing. I sort of took a lot of deep breaths, and I will honestly tell you that while I was riding home from the post office after getting this certified letter, I was like biting my nails down to the quick.
Sure.
So, and so, well, you know, it not a lot of money or anything. It was just the fact that, and I realized that, you know, you gotta deep breathe and just call them up on the phone. And I did, and I waited a long while, and somebody came on, and I cleared it up. It wasn't actually that big a deal. It's sort of a standard operating procedure. But, you know, the funny thing is I found out that four of us all together, who are publishing and working with Occupy and doing all kinds of dissemination of information, all got these IRS thingy doodles.
Interesting. You know, that was my first thought. That was my first thought.
You know,
thought
you were right.
Letter.
You're a psychic lady.
Wow.
I was kind of shocked. I don't give any credence to a thing called coincidence. So
mm-hmm.
I was like, okay. So there's this energy in the machine that says we're going to look you over in certain ways. Well, they did. My odds are back into the good piece right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that scarred the shit out of me.
Sure. Yeah, man. I can imagine.
So I got to work out, too. I wanted to bring up tonight that it is 2 years ago today that our neighbors in Haiti suffered one of the most destructive earthquakes in modern history. And we should all keep them in heart and mind because they're still... trying to recover, to do something, to make their lives better, to rebuild, which is not really happening. they're one of those massive crossings, you know, of people, of souls that we're experiencing through all of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they were supposed to get a lot of help. I mean, I myself gave through the Red Cross a couple of times, just a little bit of money, but, you know, you can put, you can't. Let me see. Let me put it this way. I've heard it put better this week. It's been going around the Twitter feed that those who have the least to give, they give the most. You know what I mean?
My mother always said that. She's like, here I am giving all of this. And these people that have far, but they don't do anything. Nothing.
Yeah, well, she needs her Occupy t-shirt. She does. Yes.
Yes.
I like your mom.
She's quite the character. But it does, it goes right along with what something I spoke to a few different friends about today. And I said, you know, it's become very clear to me that, yes, there are just a few of us, but there's enough of us that are awakened enough to their own light workingness and their purpose on this planet that, you know, if we come together and we can all hold hands, we can really do something because, you know, the other whatever percentage is, you know, wouldn't have a chance.
I think you're quite right. I think that any of the global meditations or anything that are being set up this year are vital. And we all need to pay attention to them. In fact, we might want to kick them in and also funnel them through the Occupy movements because they'll get in on that kind of thing. The majority of people who make up the Occupy movement, I think, are spiritually anchored. Even if they're atheists, they do meditate and work with energy, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And
also working by example, like, you know, with you know, people that don't have very much that are giving to others. That sets a great example because it means it really means something to you because it's not easy for you to drop however much you drop, you know. So
I know, but message, you know, the thing is. And you know, the thing is that most times when people, your mother may say that to you, but it's probably not her habit to broadcast it to the world. And it
right.
is not the habit of most people to broadcast it, well, I gave to this, and this. And the folks who you do hear saying things like that, you look over and go, okay, what do you,
yeah.
what, and your point.
Using it as
you know?
A tool. Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Using it as a tool makes me look
yeah.
better.
Yeah, it's another form of bourgeoisie, as to me.
The poet does know it.
Well, it you know that there's been some funny things going on too, and I'm sure you're aware of some of these things, but maybe our audience isn't. There's our thoughts and our actions, of course, affect the world, and the question is helping to shift it, as you just brought up. But, you know, also we have to cut ourselves a break and re-anchor ourselves, too, because magnetic north has shifted. You've heard about the pole shifting. Well, our pole shifts all the time. It's in constant flux, but only in, you know, little tiny, 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 you know, millimeters for the pole. You follow what I mean?
Yeah.
But it shifted more than ever, 40 miles or more
wow.
in the last year. And that's one of the reasons that I think 2011 was extraordinarily difficult. Geomagnetics and geological shifts are increasing on a daily basis.
How long did that take? You said over the course of last year?
Over the over the course of last year, maybe a little in 2010, but the major thrust of it was last year. And it's catalyzing a general confusion in every species, not just ours. I think that our inner gyroscopes are a bit stymied.
Sure. Well, it would have to be. The constant is no longer a constant, so everybody's got to move over
right.
40 miles. I thought you were going to say maybe 40 feet, 40 miles. That's halfway between New York and Philadelphia. Good Lord. That's incredible.
We're having to subtly shift our balance on a daily scale. And the Earth changes, when they do happen, they're greater, and the death mark swells. And the population is, as of the beginning of this year, it was 7 billion on the planet. Now, you and I have talked about this before. I'm thinking, you know, every soul is incarnating. If they're crossing over, they're coming right back down. You follow what I mean there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, because who would want to miss out on this ride?
Right? Well, yes.
I mean,
with this population, it's hard to think that every soul incarnate on planet Earth is not here right now for some purpose beyond the ken of mundane physical existence and the end of it. You know, eternity seems to be speaking. But this is eternity calling, you know. Eternity's asking questions through the Earth Mother and expecting some answers, I think. And eternity is listening. I think that's what the Mayans were trying to tell us. Now, you know, what the fuck do you mean, Gwen, eternity is listening? Well, you know, eternity, the cosmos, the universe, the upper, you know, the captains of each soul, you know, your higher self, your causal self. I think the causal self is what's really, you know, listening and putting
forward
the information out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had my meditation today, and I did feel closer to the uppers, if you want to call it that, I guess, than really ever. And really my higher self was a closer communion, I think, than ever. And this shifting, like I was saying earlier, it just seems to go like in steps. I guess maybe that makes sense with the 40 miles, because I feel like I'm taking, you know, big steps, and it's definitely racking my body. But, you know, I'm a warrior, man. I'll fight all the way to help myself through it. And even coming to the show, you know, I was like feeling real woozy walking around, and you know, I was whatever,
too.
Man.
Well,
yeah,
there's a
too.
Lot of yeah, there are a lot of different things that we do have to face. I think one of the big ones is I don't know what made us think. I guess I kind of thought, I don't know what I expected out of 2012, and we're less than half a month into it, and tomorrow is Friday the 13th, ooh, ballgame. And it's, you know, it's still, it's about facing fears. I mean, what better example than getting we're going to seize your property, when I ain't got much to begin with, and they're going to seize it over a couple of $100 in penalties,
wow.
You know? I mean, like,
wow.
Holy crap, and it was all a glitch from 2 years ago. And
wow.
We've done the right thing, you know, I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah.
You know, it's all taken care of now. I mean, one way or another, you got to, but it's like, I felt like I'd been tricked by the universe, you know. We got you. It's like, hey, man, I bit my nails to the quick. Why did I chose to, you know, I chose to freak. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think I'm only relating the adventure as it was so that people will understand. said,
sure.
Basically, right now, I think we're being asked to face fears and to just go on. You know, what was the Creedence Clearwater revival song? Moving on through the jungle, you know? I mean, we've just got to do it. Hey, Krell, David's in the chat, and I want to extend a hey, how you doing to Krell. Thanks for joining us. I think he must be feeling somewhat better. He got sick. And that's another thing. We're all cleansing our bodies away all the time, a lot.
Yes.
I don't know if that's an effect of the pollution or if it's – I think it's the effect of the pollution. I also think it's part of us dealing with I think it's us dealing with the pollution on the planet and also getting our bodies in shape to maybe turn the brain on and do a little bit better living style as physical beings, perhaps. Perhaps, you think?
And, yeah, absolutely. And also – with, I know, California and here, and I've heard Florida too, we all have these big fluctuations in temperature. You know, it could be 27 at night and it's, you know, 46, 50 during the day, or it's constant all over the place. And obviously, you know, we're not, I don't remember those kinds of shifts just as a constant. So I think it is helping us to evolve our bodies also to be able to deal with these shifts. It's like, okay, let's see how you guys can deal with jumps in temperature, for instance. And there we go.
It went down here to the 30s. They lost crops. The local economy with the bean fields and the strawberry fields. And that means that our Maya families are suffering because all of that was lost. So they won't be picking the way they would have been, and they lose income, and they have to figure out a way to make some money to keep the, you know, housing that they have that is costing them so much money. I mean, come on. Here we go, you know.
Well, it's all
here we
part
go.
Of it, right? It affects every single thing. I mean, everything. No matter what,
and you listen, to, you know, the news tell you that I was talking to my letter carrier is a very enlightened lady. I have three, and they're all pretty great people,
cool.
Big buyers of money. So, Christy is the shop steward. That means she's union, which is unusual in Florida, anyways. But she's a libertarian. Oh, it's called the stress of the entropy. I got you, Krill. Yeah, he's actually quite right there. She's telling me, because she's in the car. Okay, letter carriers see what's going on in the neighborhoods, and they hear amongst themselves what's going on in different parts of the city. And I get the goodies from them, or as Whoopi Goldberg would say in a movie, I get the skinny from them. And basically, things are happening in the city that are changing. You know, you talk about your different election districting. Well, what used to be a certain district where people lived in, like, laboring community or a school student community or, you know, the regular middle class community, it's all in a confusion right now because so many homes are in foreclosure and so many people. Oh, go ahead.
No, go on.
Oh, well, it's just, and I'm hearing this not just from, you know, it's going on not just in Florida, but all over the country, especially in places like California and Kansas and where is Des Moines, Iowa. There's a lot of states that are having problems right now with the same thing. I don't know how New York is doing. It's it's such a financial center that there's just a lot of work there, plus there's a lot of protests there, so I have no idea how it's going there. But, you know, Brooklyn, I know, and Queens has their share of that kind of redistricting, if you will. That's where they're occupying foreclosed and abandoned homes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this shifting is going on, and people are having to adapt to the change. And we're being asked as people who are basically, they're going, well, we saw this coming, and this is about the evolution of the species and the planet. We're talking about keeping our vision more in style of what our ancestors saw, that we can begin looking at the Earth as a home and not a place to strip mine for natural resources and profit off of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been thinking of that as well, and really thinking of it as a home. You know, that's the other thing that seems to be happening now. Things that I've heard and know as, you know, a truth or something that I believe in, the words themselves are starting to make more sense to me. Like, they're really driving themselves home. And even though, you know, I'm an intelligent person, I can understand what's being said, but it seems to be processing on different levels now. And to think of the Earth as our home, like, really feeling that with the excitement and the love of that one has for their home, and a communication with it, even just, you know, I don't litter, and, you know, I don't have a front yard or anything, so, you know, I always feel like on a daily basis, you know, I'm doing my best to help the Earth, but that feeling of really connecting with Earth as a home, I don't think I was really doing to the extent that I understood today. And it seems so simple, but it's a deeper understanding of that, and that seems also to be part of the shifting.
Well, yes, and where there is one, there's another. You know, where there's one person who's seeing the essence of what is happening to us on a planetary level, then there's another nearby. You know what I'm saying? That we're going towards critical mass here. And I think that Occupy is sweeping it along, of course.
Yes.
You would basically, I think you're basically coming to that conclusion. But, you know, we're going to talk about guides and getting in touch with your guides and allowing them to help you make a transition at this time. And this is just a truth. If you're born in the Americas, you know, and you are indigenous to this land, but there were the first peoples, you know. If you got folks who were born on this continent, whose ancestors come from this continent, and they live across the sea, you know, whether they're in New Zealand or they're in Ireland, say, they're indigenous to that area, but the first peoples there in Ireland would be Druids or the Tuatha De Danann, or in New Zealand, the Maori, the indigenous there, you know. Here on this land in the Americas, the red and brown people, those first peoples, those ancestors are the guides that first come to people. That's been my experience. It's not just that, you know, Gwen has those four corners, those four directions. I always have, but so have you. And so is almost everyone I've ever seen. I always see an Indian around somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Interesting, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I never thought of it that way, but that's true. That was one of my first experiences, and also one of my first past lives that I remembered.
Well, you know, folks are, when they work on their animal totem, what animals have the most to teach them,
in this life. A lot of people are working with First People Indigenous information that's been handed down generation after generation. Make no mistake, the Celts and the Teutonics and the, you know, all the other cultures have some sort of relationship, ancestral relationship with animals, because they're a part of our world, a part of our life. I saw an interesting thing on television last night about personhood for apes. It was a show. It was a TV show. But I looked it up afterwards online. And did you know that that is going on right now in this country and in many other countries, finding personhood for apes? And dolphins aren't far behind.
What does that mean?
Well, it's I could make a smart-ass remark at this point about Citizens United, but I'm not going to. It basically gives apes the right to have a caretaker in a community, and it means that they have. We call them human rights, but they'll have their own rights. In other words, you can't just treat them as some animal or piece of property. It treats them as sentient beings. And this is the way
wow.
it's going to all animals. Well, you and I know that animals are sentient.
Sure, but
yeah.
The fact that there's laws putting, you know, that we're recognizing.
Oh, yeah, it's being worked on. There's amazing things happening in the background that we aren't really looking at. You know, Krell, David's wife, she keeps chickens, roosters and chickens. And they're very colorful, and she photographs them. They're very pretty. But I'll bet she knows those chickens on a personal level. She knows their personalities. She knows what they like and dislike and how they're going to behave at certain kinds of physical dilemmas come up, or weather or elements strike. She knows what's going to happen with it because she knows and loves the animals that she keeps or has made pets of. But she knows them on a certain sentient level. I would not discuss to really bring it up with her, because I don't know if she would really get it that way. You know what I mean? But the truth is that most of us, I mean, Merlin is sentient.
Yeah, my cat. Absolutely.
Elroy is extraordinarily, he's extraordinarily sentient. I mean, he looks,
himself.
I swear to God, He echoes everything I do in bed. If I turn on bed and I hit something and go, oh, he does the same thing.
Ah, wow. Yeah, Merlin always does this weird, meow kind of cackle thing if I cry every single time. Like, he looks at me and he opens his mouth and he just goes, rah, rah, rah. Like, no sound comes out, but it's like he's, you know, transmuting, like, just, like, with me. Or, like, come on, like, what's going on? You know, let's fix the vibration here.
It's quite true. Well,
yeah.
You know, we've got so much to deal with, and we do have help. And that help comes in the form of guides and ancestor spirits who are here to give us their wisdom and to help us along, and we connect with them through the active meditation. That's how we first begin, and also to notice what happens in our environment, the subtle things, you know. It's like when you go out first thing in the morning, the first animal you see has a message for you. You know, it just depends on how you see it.
Yes.
What kind of a shamanic path you take with it. But getting to know your guides is a matter of, first of all, what fascinates you is generally what's fascinated by you. In other words, whatever culture fascinates you the most, you can probably depend on having a guide or two that has been attracted to you from that culture, from that specific time period, if you will.
Hmm.
Well, don't you find it so?
Absolutely, because you have that same vibration. As you're speaking, it's so funny that we're talking about guides today, because last week I was going to tell you, and it just didn't really come into the conversation, but it's perfect for this week, because for the first time, I found a guide that I can hear now that isn't just, you know, in my own consciousness, and it's, I kept seeing this man who was bald and Asian slash like samurai kind of looking, and his eyes were never open, and he would always talk in really short sentences and kind of just blurt things out, and he had a really interesting sort of, I don't know, scientific sense of humor. And I thought to myself, well, you know, of course if I were to come up with a guide, I would come up with one that talks straight to the point and has a sense of humor. I mean, you know, that's the way that I am. And I always just assumed that it was one of the monks from Zion, my brother's, you know, that he hangs out with that I've never met. And every time I said it was them, I was like, well, it's not that it just didn't feel right. It's like not that they would disagree, but it just didn't feel like I was saying the right thing. So from one of your, I think it was Ronnie who came onto the show, onto the Cosmic Comedy Radio Show, she sends things, and I opened on New Year's Day, it said something about the Palladians, and I'll always open one of those, and I saw the name Bashar, and I thought, well, now, I was like, I need to know who this guy is. I wonder if it's that guy that I've heard in other transmissions that I really like his voice. So I listened to him, and I looked at what he looks like, and that he's channeled through this man that looks exactly like the man in my visions. And when he channels him, he never opens his eyes. And when I heard him, I was like, this is the dude, man. This is the guy that's been talking to me.
Well, and tell me, before you got that letter, before you got the physical vision of it, how did you, you know, for folks to understand and know and reach for themselves, how did you actually make that contact? How did that become
tangible? It was in the bath in my meditation, and I always use one of your oils, or I'll go in, you know, just with light, but usually an oil, and I go in with a specific thing that I want to discuss or work out or whatever, and I make that known, and I get in the bath, and if I use one of your oils, Hathor or something, you know, I'll go with that vibration, whether they talk to me or not. But this time it was.
You're using your imagination as a creative visualization tool, and opening your third eye and allowing your imagination to evoke without giving it any kind of directions at all. Just going,
there you go.
Allowing.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Can I interrupt for one moment?
Sure.
I want to remember to do a commercial for Daughters of Isis. And the boys sent me a book for Christmas. Do you know what they sent me?
No.
They sent me perfume. And my commercial is the first paragraph, and then just a few words afterwards. And quoting from the book Perfume, it says, in the 18th century France, there lived a man who was one of the most gifted and abominable personages in an era that knew no lack of gifted and abominable personages. His name was Jean-Baptiste Grinnell. I think that's how you say his name, okay? And his name, in contrast to names of other gifted abominations, the Sods, for instance, or St. Just Fouché's Bonaparte, etc., has been forgotten today It is certainly not because Grinnell fell short of those more famous black guards when it came to arrogance, misanthropy, and morality, or more succinctly, to wickedness, but because his gifts and his soul ambition were restricted to a domain that leaves no traces in history, to the fleeting realm of scent. I have to tell you, my friends, scent is the exact tool that will bring you to any place in your own past, your own history, and it can even get you out into your own future. Scent is that much of a tool. But it's quite true that it's a fleeting realm. Its tangibleness is actually our ability with our imagination. So this is the commercial, if you will, for Daughters of Isis, the Ancestor Aromacology. That's exactly what we do. We provide you with that tangibility and scent to go where, you know, your history will take you. Anyways, I adored that first paragraph, and I wanted to say thank you to Asa and Michael for the book.
Yeah, and that's really all you need, really, is that moment of scent, because it really does help to focus you. It's not like it's something that you're smelling all the time. It definitely shifts you into another, like the Hathor, it really does have that great mother and that Egyptian that I feel so communal with feeling it, and as opposed to the 11th chakra, which is like on another level of something else-ness.
They're doorways, but you know, it's like driving down the road, you know, on a trip, and you got the windows down. And I can remember driving in Northern California with Asa, and we had the windows down, and all of a sudden I smelled, and I realized right away that it was like raw birch trees or gum trees. You know, it was that sweet smell, and there's no mistaking it. And it smelled like the camp I went to in North Carolina in the mountains. And it took me there tangibly, right away. My memory went right back to it. I could see the counselors. I knew the lady who ran the camp. And, of course, I felt like I was living in a damn Disney movie because it was like the Parent Trap, you know. But it was basically, and here I was going through these woods, driving through these woods, somewhat inland, going towards Mount Shasta. And that's just one example. There are thousands. You can use scent to open up doorways. And right now, and actually, I used scent yesterday when I was going through my rock and roll show of nail biting and everything else. When I was waiting on the phone to speak with someone at IRS, I actually used sweetgrass oil. You know, I just, okay, let me calm down. And it worked. So scent is a doorway. I wish I'd read that paragraph better. I did it very well when I was recording it. But it's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's well written. It's actually a very good movie. I think Dustin Hoffman's in it. But it's about a serial killer who just kills in order to get the musk of the person, you know,
wow. Mm-hmm.
To distill people. It's kind of like that Twilight Zone, or was it an Outer Limits episode? I bet Krell knows. In which the To Serve Man book was actually a recipe book.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'd say. Not the best thing you could probably bring up on a metaphysical show.
Well, whatever, you know, it's an interesting concept because it's true. You know, people do have certain senses. It's funny you say that also, because today you get a whiff of your own scent, especially after a workout or whatever, and I was like, I smell exactly like my father. Like, all of a sudden. sudden, I was like, this reminds me of someone. And I put it together. Isn't that, I was like, wow, that is genetics or something else, man.
Well, that can be a real doorway. That's wow. You know what I have in my bathroom?
Mm.
I have these Crystal Cruet perfume bottles. They're pretty old. I mean, I'd probably get a pretty penny for them, but they're, you know, they were mother's, and they have her perfume. One is opium, and the other is a Chanel. No, excuse me, it's Joy. It's the real perfume, too. That's why it's lasted all these years.
Mm-hmm.
If I unstop one of them and smell it, the tears begin to fall.
Wow.
It's a total right back. Either that or somebody at a bar gets too close to me that's drinking Dewars,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, oh, shit, I got to move. I got to move. I'm going to be in tears.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, the scent is key. I ask people strange questions when I'm creating scent or flower essences for them because those strange questions like where did you hide when you were a child that you can remember because it evokes scents from childhood, you know. If you ask strange questions, people are like, and it makes them pause and it brings up their memory, you know.
I see. So interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So getting to know our guides and keeping the vision of a cosmic vision like our ancestors did is really very important right now. And your trick for connecting seems to consistently be your bathtub. You're using water like a kelp. No.
Water like a
kelp. Like a priestess.
Ah.
You know.
Interesting.
Like an Avalonian priestess, if you will, or a Druid priestess.
Mm.
Water.
Yeah.
Water, it's an incredibly wonderful conductor for the psychic. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it enables.
The best. It does. And also, I see that with the temperature being right, it completely relaxes my body, and my body goes, okay, I'm comfortable, and then I can go off and do whatever I need to do.
Well,
and
also,
my body does react.
You're also very safe when you're in water, too. Did you know that?
You're also what?
Safe.
The great book of book, as they say. Yeah, you're safe. It's one of the, you'll find in movies, especially well-written ones, you know, like Constantine or The Dead Zone or
other movies where the writer had a clue to what was really going on and had read the para or psi science on everything. They use water as the conductor between worlds.
Oh. Well, it makes sense
it works.
To me, man, that's for sure. And
well, you
and
naturally do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it must be maybe part of my Cancer moon or something. But and also my father always used to take baths. He used to be in there for hours. So, you know, I think it's on both sides. It's me and also ancestral. But to finish the story of finding this guy, that he would just talk. It was one of those times where I was like, okay, so all of you out there, who's got what to say to me? And this is the guy, and I heard him a couple times, and then that's when, you know, I would hear his voice, but I hadn't made the connection that it was the same voice in the bath until I saw the same face. I mean, that was something else. And then, you know, the funny thing is that I got the email a few days before the new year, but I opened it on the new year, and I ended up listening to Bashar's Fundamentals for about 45 minutes, and it really solidified everything that I already knew, but basically gave me the I call it the wires or the strings between bridges, so that I could make the transition easier and easier and feel more like safe and more fearless about it. And so it's been great. Mm-hmm.
Can you relate any of the information?
Absolutely. The one of them, because, you know, I have a scientist brain, but I like clear-cut things. And he said there are four laws of the universe. One, you exist, period. Two, all is the one and the one is the all. And three, what you put out is what you get back. And four, change is a constant, except for the first three laws, which never change. And really thinking about that, the first one, that you exist, I mean, you know, if you haven't figured it out already, you do understand, like you said, eternity is calling. It's all, you always have been, always will be. This is a form that you are going through. You've chosen to be here. I mean, all those messages I see are in there. The oneness, also connecting with the earth and yourself and each other, knowing that we're all a community and let's help each other out here. And three, what you put out is what you get back. He talks a lot about the vibration that you're putting out. And it really, really helped to catapult me forward with my dealings with fear, because I always would feel like there was something out there and other that I should be doing, haven't thought of, need to be, you know. And it was, and I understand intellectually that there's nothing there, but it was, oh, I would wake up with it. It would show up during the day. Like there's something else, some sort of pull, and it really is just a pull of fear. And so to think about keeping myself on a content, joyous vibration, especially with creating the world that I want around me, it really, really, really helped to make that transition into, okay, if I'm feeling fear or I'm feeling unhappy or whatever it is that I don't want to, I would prefer not to be feeling, how do I get myself back to that contentment feeling and not let that feeling stick with me for too long? And he was very helpful, what he says, because he talks straight.
And what is the gist of what he said about keeping yourself grounded and allowing and flowing and not allowing the fear to? Because people, the thing is that folks get confused because emotionally, we do react when a fear scenario comes up. When we're placed in jeopardy, we're going to have fear initially. It's taking the breath and regrounding ourselves that counts.
Yes.
And did it go? I mean, am I
yes,
correct
because,
in its perspective?
Absolutely. And what he does say about that is that just because you have found your own contentment and joy doesn't mean that the world around you isn't going to do whatever it's going to do. And it doesn't mean it's all going to be hunky-dory from that moment forward. But, like you said, how you react to it, if you allow it to rock your contentment with yourself or not, and that really always goes into fear. What is this? But to use those feelings that we have as a tool to say, okay, how do I prefer to deal with this? He says that a lot. You may not always get what you're looking for with your reality, because the world is still going to be the world, but what do you do to continue to create the future that you want with the present that's bringing itself to you, and do you keep your contentment so that you can ride through this easily and not have fear? That's what he says to that. And the other thing I really liked is he talks about their fascination with us, the ETs, I guess, and why they want to help us, and because so many of us are the storytellers, he says, and we are one lady said, so we're really living Bibles. And he said, yes, you are. We're fascinated by you. And you have this physical being, and you're going through all these things in the small little ball in the middle of, you know, our galaxy. And so it's, he said, we would never invent TV because we just watch you.
That's a little creepy, but it's also, I know a lot of people get it. See it as very hopeful. I do if it's Palladians, I know, so I've got to cop to that. But if, when I listen to it, sometimes I think, well, that's a little creepy. You know?
Well, I enjoy
somebody
it because peering
at me from the fifth dimension. But then again, that could just be me peering back at myself. I'm very aware.
Hmm. Well, you know, me living in a city, and I'm always living in an apartment building, you know, I've always watched people out my door. I think it's fascinating just to see what somebody's doing, just whatever they're doing. And
well,
I also,
yeah, I understand, yeah.
And also being a storyteller, I like those stories, and I like that, and I see where my own story, I'm like, well, I'm actually glad that they're watching because, you know, I know it's a good story. I would probably want to watch me too because, you know, the strife, the joy, the this, the that. I mean, it is. It's everything a good story's got.
I'm reading. I'm reading a lot of information that says more and more if your body is cleansed and that you're grounding and you're using the tools correctly, you're able to see with your physical eyes beings nowadays. I wouldn't be surprised. I know that I'm experiencing things like peripheral vision, you know, the cat running across
yes.
the floor. I see a lot of that.
Yes, or
people
light,
in the
light flashes. Do you see
yes,
the light flashes?
Yes, and people in peripheral vision also walking or sitting down, and then I look and no one's there, but I see it quite clearly in the peripheral. And there are times when I feel as though, okay, ground control to Major Gwen. Am I quite sane here, or am I getting a little dippy? That's a part of my process because you know me, I'm a show me person, and
sure.
I am going through
and that's healthy.
A huge estrogen withdrawal. So I'm, as Rosie says, I'm in the pause. And this is the Chinese year of the dragon, and it begins on the 23rd of this month, the Chinese year of the dragon, and it's also going to be a year of more solar and lunar eclipses. We've been getting a lot of it. It's been going on for about 20 years, in and out of the photon band, and now our first solar eclipse is May. I think it's on the 20th. And then we get a partial lunar eclipse in the beginning of June. And then we get another total solar eclipse on the 13th of November and a lunar eclipse on the 28th of November. So I think these are doorways. I think these are stellar galactic doorways, but you know, wait and see. But I do
yeah.
think they are today. I just I'm not quite sure. We're going into another Saturn retrograde in February, and it's a planetary Saturn return. I'm doing my second Saturn return. I realize that now. It sort of like hit me like a ton of books falling off the top shelf when I was looking at the wrong book. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm
yeah.
looking through all of this other stuff, and then finally Liquid Light at Sex by Clow hits me, and I'm like, oh, I see. I'm going through my second Saturn return. Well, that's a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of a
thing. It really is. It's like, why don't you just get it all done at once, my friend? You're like, I'm shifting,
no.
You're shifting, around me shifting, shift, 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 shift.
No such luck. Ooh, I just came back over the page. I see Trish is
is in the waving at P.E. Nolan over there in the chat room.
Yes.
Some of the other information astrologically, from our perspective, geocentrically here, the galactic center, Hunab Kut of the Maya, is 27 degrees Sagittarius on the 1st of January this year. And it reaches 27 degrees Sagittarius once again on January 1st, 2013. So basically, we are going through, it's one foot or 1 degree by nine. It's 1 degree now. It'll be 1 degree by nine on January 1st, 2013. It'll reach its perihelion, you know, on winter solstice. So we're in the zone. Making sense. Nick, did you fall off the edge?
Absolutely. No, I'm listening. So
Yeah.
Go on. What does that mean, really, in terms of, like, what it's going to look like, if you can kind of say that?
I think that it's, you know, can I go Dickensian on you? You know, it's
sure.
The best and worst of times. Call me Ishmael. I'm somewhere on a lousy old T-shirt I had when I was in college that had all these first lines of great books on it. I keep going back to it. It's really crazy. T-shirts I wore in college kind of thing.
Wow.
I have no idea what it means. We're also all going through the effects and influences of Chiron. And that, of course, is the wounded healer. So anything that we've not healed in our emotional field, you know, in our emotional bodies, is going to come up and it's going to say, are you talking to spirit here or something?
Oh,
you've
got the popo. It's the popo. I love
it. They chime in sometimes. It's the popo. Okay. Yes. Yes, indeed. So
they're serenading us.
Absolutely. A lot of people who have been calculating all of the stuff from the stellar point of view and how the planets are turning from the solar geocentric to the stellar or galactic geocentric are very optimistic. I know that, and the other part about it is that we're going to go into a more galactic kind of horoscope for ourselves. We were speaking about the wonderful Denise LaFay's WordPress blog and all of the great information that she's been putting out. And she has a 2012 to-do list, which is absolutely worth going over and taking a look at. And it doesn't matter whether you believe in this stuff or not. If you take a look at her to-do list for 2012, it's got a lot of common sense stuff for all of the things
that good
are
heads up.
Manifest. It is a heads up, and it's. I'm going to put a link to it in the chat room for anybody. I don't think people actually see the recast of the chat when they listen
right.
and archive,
replay.
But,
yeah.
you know, hey, what the heck, right?
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I have a question.
Yeah.
What, can you explain a little bit about the new year with the dragon, what that signifies?
The year of the dragon in Chinese?
Mm-hmm. Like the attributes.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going for. Well, you know, the dragon is their North Star. That's their stellar system. That's their zodiac.
I see.
Like ours is a bit different. Theirs is, you know, theirs is the dragon. We have the North Star, Polaris.
they have the dragon. It's the mightiest of the signs. It symbolizes such character traits as dominance and ambition. It prefers to be solitary. It rules their own, and left on their own, they're usually successful. That tells you that 2012 is definitely the year of fully taking responsibility for the self. They're driven, and they're not afraid of challenges, and they're willing to take risks, dragon people. So basically, we've got a year that's going to be filled with challenge and risk-taking, but that's adventure. That's like seeing Earl Flynn on the bow of the boat with a blade in his hand saying, dun, 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 dun. You know what I mean? You've got to see it from that perspective. I'm up there with Captain Blood, arr, matey. They're passionate. They're very passionate. They do things in a very grand, fashion. So relating that to the year of the dragon, I think basically what we got going on there is there's going to be a lot of very, very big changes globally with a lot of different areas on the planet this year, but we knew that. This is the year of a water dragon too. There's the metal, the water, the wood, the fire, all the five elements, you know, have dragons. And this year is a water dragon. So it calms the fire dragon. The water dragon is able to see things from the perspective of its empathy. There's a great deal of empathy to be had in this year. And there are people, they don't always need to be right. As people, I'm seeing the descriptions, you know, as personalities instead of years. So I'm going to say that there's compromise out there, which is a really wonderful thing. And there are wonderful decision-making. So I'm saying that this is a very excellent
alignment.
Yeah, it is for what's going on in 2012. Do you know what year you were born in?
Yeah, 72. I'm a rat.
Really? Well, you will correspond to this year very well. You get along with the dragon very well. I'm a goat, and so will I. So wow. The year of the dragon doesn't come along very often. The last time the water dragon came around was 3 years before I was born.
Wow.
So dragons are special years, man. So we've got the year of the dragon. And remember,
I've always enjoyed the dragon, and I think of the water dragon, the thought is of a benevolent dragon, you know, one that can swim underneath and doesn't always have to use the fire. to go a little more introspective and, you know, maybe the washing away using that water. Very interesting.
When I was a child, I would dream about a dragon. And when I dreamt about a dragon, whatever I dreamt, when I woke up, within a day or two, it would happen. You follow?
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Generally, when I dreamt about a dragon, I knew when I woke up who was going to die, and they did, including my dad and my grandmother. And then I dreamt the dragon and my mom nearly died in a car accident, and it shocked me.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I felt at 7 years old some responsibility because of my dreams.
Interesting.
So I shut the dragon up. I said, get the fuck out of my world.
Mm-hmm. So every time you come, you're talking about deaths of loved ones, right?
It really was quite true. Something happened to me in my late 20s, and things kicked back on with a vengeance. And when I was 30 years old, things happened, and I knew my mom was going to cross. Mm-hmm. And I, my mother knew exactly when I knew, standing on a deck in her home, her summer home in Carolina. And the dragon, I knew the dragon was going to come. So I bought this beautifully made gold dragon pendant, you know, for on a chain. And I gifted it to my best friend, who was my editor at the newspaper. And I gave it to her, and I said, you know, I'm giving you my dragon. I don't want to hear from it. You can handle it. And
wow.
She took it under those circumstances. She took it, and I've never dreamt about the dragon again.
Interesting.
It is, isn't
it? It really is.
So here we are at the year of the dragon. My point being what? You know, it's strange, because as we're speaking about dragons and what the content of the year will be as far as having a Chinese year of the dragon, a water dragon. I don't think my dragon was a water dragon, but matters not. It seems the dragon is back, whether I like it or not, is my thought on it. So, yeah, we have the year of the dragon. And we also have the opportunity before us with all of the changes that are going to be going on this year, both in the stellar, the stars and the planet and all of the shifts of the Earth's mother. We have a lot of opportunities, a lot of challenges, and we have this, the greatest opportunity would be the rift that we take this year. So it's a year where the risks that we take are going to mean a great deal to us, and to not just to us, but to the world surrounding us, the world we live on, and the world we're anchored to. Make sense?
That's amazing. Yes, absolutely. You might as well be speaking, you know, right to me. It seems right now it's all about me taking these risks. And I see how big the risks are, but the one thing that always lately drives me forward, and lately I mean at least in the last year, is I refuse to go back. I will never go back to doing something that I don't love. I won't do that to myself. I would rather cross.
I think you're right. I think both of us have that kind of a challenge before us. I'm not giving, even though I spent a couple of, about 2 weeks here going, where's the money?
Sure.
I will say this, the last time that I left my bench, I got in a lot of trouble for it, so I ain't screwing with the universe on that side, but they're screwing with me right now, so we're going to do that dance pretty soon. I do say that this year is filled with opportunities, especially for healing on a personal level. And like I said, with the link that I put into Denise LaFay's site, Transitions, it's a WordPress blog. It has a lot of really outstanding information. She's got some really great insights. I don't agree word for word with everything she says, but, you know, her 2010 to-do list is a real good place to start. It's the last year of the harmonic convergence, and it ends in a galactic conjunction or alignment on winter solstice with the heart of heaven or the galactic axis. It's challenging the planet right now to let go of limiting patriarchal belief systems and religious beliefs. We're saying no to, you know, the sky goblin kind of thing. It's what it is. And basically that's the truth, because we're precessing into the age of Aquarius. We're leaving the age of Pisces, which is the age of belief, and we are going in, and believe me, we are doing the bumpy rock and roll show car. Sort of think back to the Harry Potter movies when they landed the car in the Whomping Willow. That's about how we're getting our start off, I think, into 2012. But what we're being asked to do is to shed, you know, belief systems and to come to a self-knowledge or a self-authenticity. It's wonderful to share the spiritual relationship with other people and with the planet and with spirit. The idea of sharing a relationship with a power outside of yourself is still the only resolution to that. It still remains to be war and greed and patriarchy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I've been
Sometimes you got it, tell me.
Yeah, no, my brother Zion has been saying that, especially if you've been working towards your own alignment, the people that are around you now are your peeps. They've been there. They're supposed to be here. You made an agreement to be together, and you know exactly who they are. And a lot of people that either, you know, need to transition out or, you know, are going to choose a different path, are absolutely transitioning out. I see amongst my friends and acquaintances, everybody's either moving, getting a new roommate, looking for a new roommate, making a fresh start.
A lot of fresh starts going on. Yeah. It's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good sign. There's a lot of new relationships out there that are beginning, and people seem to know with these new relationships, you know, they've had enough experience. Even young people seem so much wiser this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that from a deluded point of view. I'm saying it from the point of view that it just seems to be how the stars are wagging.
Yes. I absolutely agree. I see, in my world, I can see very clearly the people who are fighting for their own salvation, that are finding themselves and doing whatever they need to do to strip themselves and to embrace themselves. And then I see the others that, you know, aren't. And, you know, it's a very difficult struggle. Please.
Part of it is that right now we're being asked to let go of anything that is dysfunctional for us.
Yes.
That's one of the reasons that the ayahuasca weekends and workshops and taking the ayahuasca is opening up to the emotional bodies and cleansing. You know, the ayahuasca shamanism that's being practiced here in this country on weekends and such, you've heard about them. What they're doing is they're, and you know I'm working with the herb. I'll send you some stuff in the box, okay?
Absolutely. Hey, whatever gets you through, right?
Every show I do now, I take the dry ayahuasca plant that I have, and I chew on it. You know, it's not the same as taking the brew, but it is a little altering, and it grounds me and anchors me a lot of times. So I'm using these plants to give me exactly, well, not exactly, but whatever I need to conduct myself as far as dealing with, you know, that lack of estrogen. Thank you. I'm in the pause. We're going to talk about the pause. But these ayahuasca weekends, I'm beginning to think, have some great value because what they do is open people up. We're very into the ethnobotany. Here we're talking Terrence McKenna land. It opens people's emotional bodies up. It's like a crack up. It's a fracture. It allows you to peer in and see yourself, and it's quite shocking, it's quite revealing, and it's quite uplifting and amazing. It's responsible for a 70% cessation of drug abuse rate. Let's put it that way. It also has triggered people into more self-authentic behavior patterns that have helped them to face such traumas as cancer. And, I mean, it's really, it's quite something. And this is my venue, the plants. And
It seems like it snaps you into place.
Well, I'm needing to find the time and the place, and I'm putting the intention out there to do one of these workshops and to transmute the ayahuasca so that I myself can find out because, hey, maybe it'll give me some help with some of my addictive personality problems. And also give me the insight I need to create more. That's what I'm always about, man. The bottom line for me is just being more. And you being a writer and an artist and an actor, I mean, I got to imagine that in the bottom line of much of your spiritual pursuit is just the opening of the way for you for your creativity.
Absolutely. It's just always being truer and truer and truer to myself and not judging. I'll never forget what, and it pops up whenever it needs to. I forget all about it, and then it comes right back. My first acting teacher gave us all this printout of, I think it's Cecil DeMille, who says it is not the actor's job to, the actor's job is only to create. The actor's job is never to judge their own work and deem it valuable or fit or whatever. If you start doing that, then you're already starting to not just create. And
you've lost your way.
Right. And that the artist will never be, you know, it shouldn't judge because it'll never be satisfied, because the minute you're satisfied, that's the day that you become not an artist. That's what that was his quote. And, I don't think it has to be about not satisfied. I think you should always feel satisfied with your work. But I think what he really meant, if I could be so bold, is to say that if you say, okay, I've created enough, that means now you've decided that you no longer have to create something and that you become something else, which also doesn't mean you have to create your whole life. I don't think it's a judgment. But that always creating without the judging seems to definitely strengthen the truth of the creativity that you are bringing forth. So the less you judge, the more it just goes.
I'm thinking that the point of that is to get out of yourself, not be so busy in your head, and not to judge, and just allow life to happen because you got the tools to do it.
Yes.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
Well, I've been working with this flower essence that I made of it, you know, vibrational homeopathy of it. And I don't work with it often.
What's the effect? Yeah, what does it feel like? Explain them. What does it feel like? What is the?
Well, I have not actually brewed anything. I haven't distilled it down. I've only been using it with a homeopathic application, the flower essence, which is something that's infinitely more. Well, when you're conscious, let me put it that way. I took it the other night before I slept, about 3 weeks ago, actually. Not the other night, but 3 weeks ago when I first came up with it. The other night before I slept, and boy, did I get colorful dreams. But I woke without a handle on them. I was amazed, but I woke without a handle on them. But it's funny, I remember them quite clearly, and it's as if I walk with them every day. It's really strange.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's part of me distilling it down.
What was the feeling of the dream?
Well, one that I haven't had in quite a long time. Everybody talks about how wonderful and how loving they are of their flying dream. I don't get flying dreams. I've gotten maybe two in my life. My flying dreams for me are the ones where I'm out in the ocean on my boat, you know, going along.
That makes sense. Right.
And I was out on the ocean in my boat going along quite a bit. So it tells me that it took me to a place where I feel the most secure, the most content, and the most open-hearted. That definitely happened, and it was in full color. I mean, most of my dreams are color, but I don't come back with such vivid color. It's like, this isn't Buena Vision. This is like, you know, HD spectacular.
Wow. That's so cool. So you just took a little bit and you went to sleep, and then it sounds like, you know, if somebody doesn't want to jump right in to do a dosage of ayahuasca.
Well, that's what I'm actually trying to create. I'm trying to create that alternative choice for people who really want to heal and to open themselves but aren't willing to go through, because it really is, from what my research is showing me, it's really a mind fracture. You have to be willing, and I've been through those with peyote and such, and I had a teacher who put me through them, you know, put me through my paces and helped me to learn how to ground, and ayahuasca is another process like that. You know, you don't approach it and go to it one weekend and then walk away. You shouldn't. In other words, you should approach it as a shaman. You need to find your place inside where you're ready to sit down and allow it to be opened up for you. Because
strap yourself in and get ready for the ride.
Well, it's like the great mystery schools of the Hellenistic period, you know, that mirror that showed the face at the end of your journey through the scary maze was actually your own, but it was so distorted until you realized that you were in great fear, and then you realized and you were comfortable. It's facing your inner fears, okay? If you're afraid of a machete-waving murderer loose in the neighborhood, you're probably going to have to face that. You follow?
Right, absolutely.
And if you had something happen in your life, and this is what my research is telling me about ayahuasca, if you had something happen in your life that was emotionally traumatizing, but perhaps you were too young to really, and you block that memory out, but it's been affecting you, ongoing, I'm young and enough to understand, you know, ongoing throughout your whole life. Like, I mean, I went through a physical trauma. I put my hands on a rotisserie as a little toddler, you know.
That would be like pneumonia for me. Right. It would be pneumonia and almost dying, all of that. Right.
So you will come to the place in your, because your body carries that memory as well as your subtle body. And ayahuasca will open you up to the memory of that, and I am told that you will see spiral out the graduation of your behavior patterns from it. Now that is seeing your life pass before your eyes without actually physically dying, and that's shamanic. And I guess the year 2012 is asking us to take the shaman's journey. Some people are not going to be able to do that. You and I both know folks that will never go near it with a 10-foot pole. However, they're willing to sit down and allow themselves to begin, you know, looking at things in a more deep way, whatever. And so I'm working with the flower essence, with the homeopathy of it, to see how much can be done. And I'm taking notes, researching it, and I'll send you some. and you help with research. And see just exactly how much help it can be, you know.
Well, thank you, Gwen. I'm so glad you're doing that because, you know, I've done some research on the ayahuasca, and I saw this one man who, you know, I could tell the energy. I was like, okay, this guy definitely has a very nice, grounded, you know, love and light thing going on a daily basis. And he took it, and he said, you know, I guess he took a double dose because he was like, this isn't doing anything. And he was like, you know, yes, I was that guy. And he saw his Buddha self. And then, yeah, and so, you know, he flew up into his...
We are talking about DMT here, folks, so make no mistake. This is a mind-opener. Graham Hancock wrote a whole book on it, practically. And what he found spiritually, he was opened up by it completely, and that was after he'd written several books that were incredibly enlightening.
Yeah, well, this guy saw the Buddha in him, and then he also saw his ego judge and went, you're not that, who do you think you are? And then went catapulting down into the lower realms. I was like, wow, man, that's, and then he was growing up, you know, couldn't do anything about it. So you know, and I think I don't think it's necessarily my path to have to go to that. I would know and I would feel, you know, a pull towards it, but I do like the idea of, you know, the Gwen scent with it. I would definitely be interested in toying with that, especially also with that dream realm. I took classes in dreaming in college that were extremely helpful, and I'm pretty good with my dreams. But I do feel there is that other side, that experience that you had. So thank you for putting that together, Gwen.
Well, I'm
walking
working
the walk,
on it, man. and it is a research essence. I want the listening public to know that it's not something I'm selling right now. And I do create formulas, of which this would just be a part of. I can already see myself adapting a couple of my already formulas for light body work with this, but it's something that everybody should consider right now because it's time to cleanse. It's time to look the big bad boogeyman in the face, and it's also time to be kissed by the sun, if you will.
Exactly. And yes. And the fact that, just like you said, with the, you know, 99 monkeys effect, that you doing this research, it's putting that already in there for us. And, you know, I'm sure at some point it will come on the shelf as a Daughter of Isis product. I can see it. So, but just the fact that it's getting
I
in there.
I you know where it belongs already. I know where it needs to be. It needs to be in my Inlakesh, not Inlakesh, my Lightning in the Blood is what it's called, Mayan Essence, which is what they call the Jaguar priests used to have a term they called Lightning in the Blood. And this is definitely it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It feels completely right. Wow. Really good stuff, man. I like all these developments that are happening here, you know, like all these, it seems like we're all tinkering in our corners. I don't know if I'm right or not, but I can kind of, I can feel Trish like kind of going with us, but it just it coming in from all of our sides, whatever, you know, we're guided towards doing and whatever also comes into our path, you know, like you have access to, you know, you have the plant that hasn't come into mind, but yet I'm working over here, and you know, it warms my heart. It really does that we're all doing everything we can.
that is a good thing. Speaking of Pete Nolan, Trisha has gone to bed, and I'm thinking that do you have anything left for tonight's show that you want to address or talk about?
I think that's really good. We covered a lot of stuff this time.
Maybe next time we could talk about a little bit more about how you journey out and back to interact with your guides. I think it's important to get people some tangible information they can work with,
yeah.
you know, instruction.
Yeah.
And you have a really
yeah.
great way of doing it. I
Thanks.
Like your methods.
Thanks. Yeah, that would Sweet. Be great. I would love to talk about that because, you know, I am the scientist and I do always approach everything, you know, in theories, data, the hypothesis, and conclusion. So, yeah, I could definitely tell you, you know, my experiences. Hopefully it'll help others. That would be great.
Wonderful. We'll do that. I want to remind anyone who's going to listen in later or who's listening that actually tomorrow is the debut of we're doing a actual drum line, a radio block of independent radio shows on Blog Talk Radio beginning at 4 p.m. with the Here Be Monsters production of Mic Check, which will speak from anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour on taking calls and the topics and events that are going to be ongoing this year, this new year, with the Occupy groups across the planet. And I'm hoping I can talk Nicole Tomasini into hosting one or two.
Yeah, man, that would be great. That would be great. Tomorrow I'm
there
doing our next I Love Nicole show. We're working on the good conversation side. So not tomorrow,
oh,
but
congratulations.
But yes.
Good. So tomorrow we do have Mic Check. Friday Mic Check with Here Be Monsters at 4 p.m., followed by, and indulge me here, Nick, I've got to remember off the top of my head the whole crowd here. At 5 p.m., we have Dusty Taylor's, I believe the show is called What's Jerking My Chain. And at 6 p.m., the anchor of Friday with Wild Wild Left with Diane G. And that'll segue into Ruth Ann and Brian Stetton with Progress Towards Democracy, which is going to be on at 11 p.m. this evening also, for those interested. And ending up with Pinko the Bear, man, Pinko, at 12 midnight Pacific time. That's pretty late for us, Nick. But I always listen to him in the morning because he's just
nice.
Really, really great.
Nice.
We're all a drumline of independent little citizen journalist outfits that are speaking truth to power and boycotting the lies of the MSM. So there you have it. And this, of course, is the Consciousness Shift with Nicole Tomasini in New York. Right, Nick?
Yep.
And me down here in South Florida, I'm Gwen. And please remember that this is sponsored by Daughters of Isis Ancestor Aromacology. You'll find a link on our show page, and you also find a link to the I Love Nicole show. Nick, you got any info on that?
We are going to start, it'll be on YouTube and on iTunes in a couple weeks once we get some editing going, but it's going to be anywhere from a half hour to an hour of good conversation from some characters. And we had our first trial of the show, and I had a whole list of questions just in case there was some sort of lull, and I got to one. So it seems to be a good start.
Great. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
I look forward. I enjoy the ones that are already up there. So please, people, go on over
and click on the I Love Nicole show, get over to YouTube and take a look.
I have some bloopers up too on the I Love Nicole show on YouTube. It's 2 minutes of me flubbing things. So check that out. That's always fun.
Okay, cool. I'd like to see that. I like bloopers.
Me too.
We're going to play you off tonight with a little something I found that I used to love this a long time ago. I used to sneak into this guy's amphitheater and listen to him talk to his people, his students.
Nice.
Anyways, talking about home here.
Cool.
Until next Thursday. And we'll talk to Nick about getting in touch with our guys, a little one-to-one. And that's it for us tonight. This has been Here Be Monsters production of The Consciousness Shift. Nick, night-night.
Night-night. Have a great week, everyone.
Everyone have a good week, yes, and an even better weekend.
Mm-hmm.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
Thank you for listening. This has been Here Be Monsters, The Consciousness Shift, and I guess the Earth is where we make our stand. It's a great idea. That was Carl Sagan, the blue dot. Home.
Good night.